Hello, everyone, and welcome to Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast. As always, I'm John, joined by Nate. Nate, how's it going?
Pretty good, John. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good. Can't complain. A little bit late in the evening again, but that's fine by me. I was able to get chores done before this, so now I'm just relaxing.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so we actually have a guest this week. I'd like to introduce Don George. He and his wife, Terry Sines, own Magenly Farm, where they breed nationally recognized La Manchas. Just a few accolades to include here. They had the 2019 National Show Premier Exhibitor was them.
That was 2017.
Yep. 2017, they were Premier Exhibitor, I think Premier Breeder, yep. And they had Premier Sire, yeah. Right, Don?
That's correct.
And you also had the first place produce of Dan.
Yes.
So you guys, and that was one show. You guys had, I think, first place intermediate kid that year. Just one national show. That's a little tidbit of what they do. So Don and Terry have that consistency that everyone dreams of. Don is also the director of District
3. One of them, yep.
Welcome to the show. Yep. We're proud to have you on this week. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. It's an honor to be asked to be on here. And I think you're boosting us up a little higher than we actually are, but appreciate that and all the kind words.
Well, I mean, I've seen the pictures, so I don't think I'm boosting that much.
I got a question for you, Don.
Yeah.
Where does the name Magenly come from? That's not really a common word. I Google it, and you guys are the only thing that comes up for Magenly.
I'll tell you what. If you wanted to Google where that name come from, you'd have to Google Terry's three children's names, Matt, Jennifer, and Lisa.
Okay.
That's kind of a unique name, and I think it's pretty neat, and it sounds really neat, too. And, she named it after three very special children. Matt, Jennifer, and Lisa are very good children. And they were actually a part of her initially when she started raising goats. And she's been doing this for 33 plus years now.
I think I remember that.
Yeah. And I've only been doing it with her for the last 11 years. And so I can tell you more about how that happened, too, when you're ready.
Well, we'd love to move on into that. Yeah.
It's an interesting story. Terry and I went through grade school and high school together, and we had a crush on each other all through school, but needless to say, there was things that I was raised in a different religion than she was. They were Presbyterian, and we were holiness, and we kind of frowned on and dating other people in school because of how strict our religion was.
Right.
So after high school, I didn't have money to go anyway, so I went to work in a factory right there in town, and a few months later, found out Terry was working upstairs. And of course, I was 18 by that time, and I decided I'm just going to go ask her out anyway. So I went up and asked her if she wanted to go out for dinner on a Friday night, and she said, "Oh, I can't. I'm going out with somebody." Well, my mistake took that as she was seeing somebody, and I didn't want to interfere. And I ended up moving away to Pennsylvania because the company was going to shut down. We lost track of each other. Went through some bad marriages, and she found me 11 and a half years ago on Facebook and sent me a friend request and goes, "Oh my God, it's Don George." And I got her request after I got home from work late one night, and I said, "Oh my God, it's Terry Sines." And so we connected, and I asked her to meet me in Binghamton, New York for lunch one day, and she met me, and we've been together ever since. And if you had asked me before that if I'd ever want a goat, I would have said, "What would I want a stupid goat for?" But I asked her, I said, "What is your motive for keeping these goats?" And she said she'd really like to have a national champion one day. Needless to say, I spent all my time working, hunting, fishing, helping my son in the stone quarry business, and I was just working. Until I met Terry, and then I started refocusing my efforts. I told her once, she told me what her goal was. I said, "Well, I reached a lot of my goals in my life. You're going to teach me everything you know about goats. I'm going to read, I'm going to learn, and hopefully help you find that national champion one day. So we got a ways to go yet, but we're gaining.
I agree. You guys are definitely gaining. That's pretty awesome that you guys were able to reconnect and rekindle.
Now, were you guys both, so you were both up north here, as we would say, because you're now down in the Carolinas.
Right. I lived in northeast Pennsylvania when she reconnected with me, and she lived about an hour away just across the border in New York a little bit.
Yep.
And so it made it pretty easy to connect. And I had worked at a steel company for about 20 years there, and I was working as a purchasing manager there. And so the first year we were together, she had her goats at her daughter's place in Masonville, New York. And
I know Masonville. I work in Masonville.
So we had a ton of snow that year, and all she had was that portable electric fence to keep them in there. And we were out there shoveling snow around that fence on both sides to keep goats in there. And she said, "Do you ever think of moving south?" And I said, "Well, sometimes, yeah, when you have days like this." So we came down here and found a place and got some jobs. Took me a while to find another purchasing manager job, but I'm now working for a software engineering company for truck diagnostics, and I've been there 6.5 years, and great company to work for, Noragon Systems, and they appreciate what I do, and I appreciate how they treat me.
Good.
Put in some good hours for them along with the hours on the farm, so my days are full, and thank you guys for giving me a break tonight for at least an hour here where I can sit.
I hope you got a glass of water or something to, you know, sit down and relax with.
Yep.
So you mentioned you guys were breeding for, you know, 30 plus years. I believe it was like 1988, if I recall, that Terry started. Now, let's face it, that's quite an accomplishment. Most farms don't last 10 years as AGCA, you know, pumps out that information. Every once in a while, you'll see that number. So what keeps you guys going besides the obvious passion that you have for your animals and wanting that national championship? What's really driving you guys today?
Well, I would say, you know, yeah, we would love to reach that goal of having a national champion. And I told you when I first met Terry that I'd say, if you asked me if I wanted a goat, well, I'd say, what would I want a stupid goat for? But she will probably tell you that I love them as much as she does now, if not more.
I think we have photo proof of that, Don. I've seen the photos.
Terry does a good job of capturing pictures, especially when I'm not expecting it. I wish she would get on here, but she just doesn't like to be the focus of attention. And she's
my wife doesn't either.
So, but I try to remember everything that she said and how she would want things done. But that's our main focus. We love the animals. We love taking care of them. And, you know, they show you the same affection right back. And you can see that, as they said, in the photos or videos that Terry gets. And plus, you know, the other thing is we enjoy the people.
Yeah.
The shows that we go to, it's not just about competition. It's about the friendships you make there and helping people. And, you know, Terry and I took a couple of the falls off. Now, last year we showed at the fair shows, but 2 years in a row before that, we took those falls off just to take a break. Because we had, if you remember, we had Sonnens too when we first came down here. We had Sonnens and some recorded grades. So when show, we were on our feet nonstop. And it's like, oh man, you get done at the end of the day, your feet be swelled up a little bit and hard to get your shoes off.
Yep. Yeah.
You were just wore out after a weekend of showing when you're showing three different breeds. So,
I'm right there with you. I've got the Oberhausli recorded grades and Nigerians, and it's tough. If people don't realize with those three breeds, it takes a lot.
We learned through that, you know, we were, you know, in over our heads a little bit, even though we were doing well with all of them.
Yep.
It's just when you're working full time jobs, Terry works full time, I work full time plus extra. At 4-hour jobs, and then the farm, you're putting in at least 30 hours a week. So you're putting in a really full week every week. But, you know, having those extra breeds, it really helped us to start improving our La Mancha breed, which is the main breed, once we sold those animals and cut our herd back. And that's a piece of advice I'd give to anybody, you know.
Maybe Hopefully my wife hears well, that loud and clear.
You know, I have to say, Don, I really do agree with you. I think back, you know, about the time that Terry was getting into, about 1988, I remember, you know, I heard we had all six breeds at the time, Nigerians and Sables, even Guernseys weren't even really heard of at that point. And we had all six breeds, and it was hard to focus on any one breed. And then we started getting beat by these herds that were one breed, and we just couldn't hold a candle to them. So, yeah, I do agree. If you could focus on one breed, great. You know, that's great. I have to say, by the way, I did love your Sanan, so.
Thank you. They were very nice, and I tell you, you know, Terry Spoil did something to me because I never used to be so emotional over an animal. But when we sold them, I cried every animal I walked to the trailer that day that we sold those Sanans and the recorded grades, because you are attached to them. But we knew it was the best thing for us. And it's not so much, you know, about having different breeds. It's the amount of animals that you have. If you want to focus on improving the quality of any of the animals you have, whether it's one breed or two breeds, you have to have that number and a manageable number where it's not wearing you out and not taking so much of your expense and your time that you can't keep up with all of them properly.
Exactly.
Right. And speaking of that emotion, you posted a video, maybe it was earlier this spring, where you guys had sold probably four or five does. Yeah. Maybe.
Oh, yeah, I remember the one. That one. Yeah.
And you posted that video. Yeah, you posted that video on Facebook. And really, it opened up my eyes to the person that you are, and the type of people that you are. Because a lot of people, it can kind of seem heartless when you're in the ring. So, and there's that disconnect when you're far away. You know, you're down south, we're up north. But I mean, you touched me deeply with that video and that sentiment. That I reached out to you right away and said, "Can I share this? This is amazing. You did a wonderful job." So I mean, the passion's definitely there. There's no doubt.
It is, and then it is. It's heartfelt. I never thought I'd be like this with goats, dairy goats, or whatever. I love animals. I've loved animals, but I've never gotten this attached to animals as I have with these dairy goats. And you know, I still enjoy fishing and. But hunting, you know, I did a lot of that in the past, and I know it doesn't even cross my mind right now for hunting. I love going out and videotaping animals, taking the grandchildren fishing. So it's nice having them here. And that's the biggest thing to me out of all this. You know, we like to win. We like our animals to place well everywhere we go. I have started getting more enjoyment when I see children and young people winning and seeing the joy and expressions on their face more than I do ourselves win, as much as I like to see us win. But, you know, one thing that Terry and I have done, and it's not because we think we have the highest quality animals. Every year we've donated at least one animal of a decent quality to a youth that we thought was deserving of an animal to help them improve.
Wow. That's
and,
awesome.
We actually gave 1 year, I think, we donated three animals. Last year at North Carolina State Fair, one of those individuals that we gave one to, Isabel Holmes. She took one of our La Mancha dolings as a dry yearling and won junior grand champion with it, and that was awesome just to see the tears in her eyes.
That hits me. Now, so I gotta ask, are your kids, are your grandkids involved too, or?
Well, most of them don't live close enough. We do have some living with us right now, Jaden and Bryson and Zavaya. Jaden loves being a part of it, and you know, who knows? As they get older, maybe they want to be a part of it and help when we go to shows, and that would be awesome. But it's going to be totally up to them. We're not going to push them to do it.
Yep.
But if they want to do it, we're definitely going to make sure it happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you're not doing any more foot races with Dave now.
My leg is still healing, so he keeps asking me every day. He'll go, whoever gets there first wins, you know. So,
John, never stop with you next, okay?
I found a way to beat Jaden. And what I do is when he says, whoever gets there first wins, he's usually right behind me or alongside me. And I grab him and pick him up, and that way he can't run.
You carry him with you? Or?
I carry him with me, and then I set him down behind me before we get to the board.
That'll only work for so long.
Yeah, he's going to get big enough, he's going to pick you up and carry you.
Having said that, I've found another trick that kind of just drives him crazy, him and his brother Bryson. Sometimes they'll say they both want to race me back to the barn. Well, on the way back to the barn, you have to go past our trailer. And, you know, we have that big trailer with the rack on top.
Yep.
So when we're running, I'm not running right now because I can't run. I can kind of try, but until my leg gets healed up, I can't do much running. But I'm on the way back, they're running to the barn. They're not looking behind them. So I got split off and climb the ladder up to the top of the trailer and get up there. And then they come back and they're like, where's Don? And they're just circling all around, looking for me, yelling for me. And I'm saying, I'm right here. You keep walking by me. And they just have never yet figured out where I'm at. And I've done this several times to them. I just tell them, ghost mode.
So you guys don't have a huge herd. I say that, but you're still breeding 20 or so.
Not a huge herd.
Going to be breeding a total of 17 this year. We're going to keep one dry, so we'll have a total of 18 does here, and we have 5 bucks, and one of those might go, you know, this fall or so. But right now we have 5 bucks, so we have a total of 23.
So you have. Most people would say that's a smaller herd. I mean, my herd's smaller, but not by, you know, a long shot. But you guys still pump out that consistency most breeders would just die for. What pointers do you have to keep that consistency on a smaller scale?
I'm taking notes.
Well, I would say, and we're still not there. I mean, we have a long ways to go. People say that we have consistency. We do most part. But at the same time, like right now, we have 8 kids that we kept. That's more than twice what we need to be keeping. But they all look so consistent, it's hard to pick what you want to keep until they freshen again.
Yep, I'm right there.
So once they freshen next spring, you'll probably see us sell maybe half of those. We said that about our yearlings this year, and I think we still have 5 yearlings.
Wow.
You know, they might need another freshening.
Well, I told Terry, Terry's ready to sell some of them. I said, no, I want to see him freshen one more time.
I sold a couple first fresheners this year that I might have wanted to sit another freshening on, but can't keep them all.
I do have a question along those lines, John. So do you often sell a doe that you really want to see freshen, but you know you're selling her to a herd where you will see that doe freshen in the show ring, and she might beat you?
We know that. Yep, we've done that, and especially with our kids, that's usually the hardest part, because we have developed a lot of consistency with what we're trying to breed. You know, we're looking for everything anymore, and every year I'm learning something more to pick out, whether it's the I think the key thing that I probably started focusing on with Terry when I started helping her is nice top lines and udder shape. And then I'm going from there. I'm looking for the flatness of bone and the spacing between the ribs and the angularity and the extension of the brisket and the shape of the head. And when you've narrowed down those biggest items that are highest on the score point, the scorecard, then you start focusing on something else and saying, okay, I need to grade this dough to something that will improve that. And that's how you try to get that consistency narrowed down. But there's herds out there that are doing a lot better job of it than we are yet.
Well, there's always going to be that person that's a step ahead of you, but I think you guys are well on your way. If I was into La Mancha's, you guys would probably be my first stop. You know, it's I know I keep saying consistency, and consistency is a huge thing with me. Any animal that I brought in recently, when I first started, it's another story, but recently, I want to see that consistency, and I want to know what I'm getting into. I don't want something that looks good on paper, perchance, but doesn't have that data to back it up, you know? And you guys definitely have that. And you guys started breeding this year already, which you guys are down south, so you guys don't care if it's February or January because you guys still have some decent weather there.
February down here, nice.
So you mentioned fine-tuning. What's really the big focal point as a herd? Because I know every doe is going to have a different focal point that you want to improve, but what's the big focal point of improvement this year?
You can be general on this, Don. You don't have to give your secrets out.
Yeah.
To be honest, we don't have any secrets. And, you know, people ask us, what our secrets are, and we don't have any secrets. And that's the thing I want to make clear, too, is that we're willing to share anything that we're learning because we want to see the breed improve overall. And we have gained that knowledge. And I'll tell you right now, the biggest people that have shared their knowledge with us is Lucky Star, Don and Judy Hoy. Yep. And we have some other breeders too that have helped us along the way, Midleaf, and they shared a lot of knowledge with us. And we can't thank them enough for helping us gain some of the knowledge that we've needed to get where we're at right now. And we still have a ways to go to catch up to them, but that's the type of people you want. People that are willing to share the knowledge to improve the breeds overall, which will help improve the AGDA organization overall. If you can improve breeds like that and people sharing the knowledge, and you're going to find some people that don't want to share the knowledge because they're afraid somebody's going to be better than them. But
But isn't that one of those main goals of AGDA, to improve the breed? I'm right now just kind of as a a study kind of going through the AGDA rule book, and in the early pages, that's kind of one of those bullet points that they put, is to improve the quality of the dairy goat.
That's correct. So that's what we want to do. And I have to go back to when we first came down here. You guys might find this funny. When I first started, we didn't show the first year we moved to North Carolina. We just went around and watched some shows, and people didn't know who we were. Nobody knew who we were. And they thought we were new into dairy goats. They didn't know that Terry had been doing this for 33 years.
Oh, wow.
At that time, it wasn't 33 years, it was 23 years at that time. So the second year we were down here is when we went to shows. And of course, I still have a lot to learn, and I still have a lot to learn, but I was just basically starting out then helping Terry show. I didn't know nothing about showing and except what she was telling me and how to set them up, and I still wasn't doing it right. I'm not going to say who the judges were that we showed under, because now I could talk with them and joke with them about this, but I definitely wasn't doing a very good job of showmanship at that time. And the judges weren't placing me up there very well. And Terry, we were placing well, and we did good. We had some first places and some grand champions, but if they weren't up front, I wasn't happy. I thought Terry's had the most beautiful goats there, and they should be up front. And so if they placed back third or fourth, and I'm like, mouthing to Terry, the judge doesn't know what he's talking about. Little did I know, the judge did know what they were talking about. As I started paying attention over time, and I'm looking, okay, what they're saying about the one in front and the one behind, you know, all the different comments, and I'm looking and like, okay, yep, he's right about that. He's right about that. But I didn't know nothing about scorecard or anything like that at that time. But there was a couple of those judges took the time to actually show me where my goat was set up wrong and how I could improve that, making that goat look better. And I thought that was pretty nice. They could tell that I had never shown before. And just the fact that they took the time during that show while I was out in the ring to say, hey, if you did this, this would really help, you know, present that doe a little bit better. And I can forever thank those judges for that. And that helped me a lot as far as improving. And still there, even a few years after that, some judges gave me some tips on what to do. And I quickly started learning from some of the young people that were out there doing really good.
You know, you can't underestimate those young people out there. Really can't. Many of them are pretty sharp.
Yeah, and that was actually brought up last week on our podcast about pet peeves. So I'm glad I'm not the only one that got like that when I first started showing.
I can't say anything because I was probably in diapers when I started showing. So I'm sorry. I'm out of here.
Yeah, you just, it's just part of you. So we were talking about breeding season. I know, Nate, you had a question about artificial insemination.
Oh, goodness. Give me a second.
If you're going to ask me about that, you're asking the wrong person.
Oh, really?
Well, it was a general question. It was general.
I think it was along the lines of, like, how do you bring in, what do you use to select your new genetics, to bring in new genetics into your herd?
I can answer that question. It's pretty simple for us now because I think if anybody has a chance, even if you don't think your animals are ready to show a national show or, you know, compete with some of these top herds, you need to see the animals in person. In 2016 was the first time we went to nationals, and we didn't think we were anywhere close to being ready yet, but we had judges telling us we needed to go. And we thought we needed a few more years to even think about placing halfway decent at nationals. And so we went to nationals at Harrisburg in 2016, and it was probably the best thing that we ever did. We did have some first place animals there.
I was going to say you did. Junior Doe, I think.
Yeah, we had a first place junior doe, Hira.
Yep.
She's one of our finest does here and love her. You've probably seen videos of her too that Terry just posted.
Yeah.
So when you go to nationals, you need to take the time and go look at these animals from the other top herds.
Yes, and I agree. And
what it is that's so good about them. And that's from my reading and studying. That's what you want to do. If you have a good foundation of does, you want to select a buck from the finest does in the country that you can pick from. And that's what we've tried to do. And I think that's been the biggest key in us. Now, and if you can't get that buck, you try to get some semen from that buck. And that's how you try to select your genetics. And you look at, again, we go back and look at what it is you want to improve on the does that you have. Each doe, we try to look at what can we improve on that one, and what buck's dam has those genetics that could help improve that.
Okay, I got one for you. Okay. Now this is where my question was actually leading to. Two straws, two different bucks, one doe. Mm-hmm. What's the plan? I saw there was a Magenly post where you guys had AI and a doe with two different bucks.
And all right. you've had to have seen that some other people have already experimented with doing.
Yeah,
that.
I think actually again in Lamontis, I think did Julie do this?
Yes. Yep.
Yes.
So after we got, you know, she had done that, we got thinking that it's interesting and it might be worth a try. And there's a couple of reasons for doing it. And we actually, I'm just going to be interested to see if this one takes. We did one with Kaleidoscope, and we AI'd her the first day that we were supposed to with a buck. And then she was still in heat the next day. So we AI'd her again with a different buck. So there's two things that can happen from that. And they're both good quality genetics.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see if one of them takes or if both of them take. And if only one of them takes, which one took, and to see what the timing, which timing was better.
Okay. I was wondering why you did it, because I was wondering if it was trying to make sure you got it, or if it was in the case of you had only one straw of each.
And I think that, you know, I think it's some people will do it just to see, can I get one of each? You know, can I
yeah, that's happened. That's what I that's was happened too.
So it'd be interesting to see if that happens too. So
is this the first time you've done it?
This is the first year we've done that, yes.
Oh, wow. Okay, so we have to like watch down, 5 months from now, see if it worked.
Oh, well, I'll be picking your brain for sure. So, that's interesting. I like that.
So Terry keeps really good notes, so she's documenting all this, and then and also the hour that we put the straw in. So it's going to be interesting to see if the one that we put in earlier took, or if the one that later took, or if they both took.
Now, is Terry mainly the one who does the AI?
Cool. I do the AI.
Okay.
She assists, of course. She gets a speculum in there, and I'm the one that gets ready with a straw, and then I save just a bit at the end of it to put under the microscope to make sure it was good.
See, I do the assisting, and Jen does all the other stuff. So I pull the straw, and
Jen's got the cooler head, as we learned last week when you giving shots to your doe.
So. Yeah. I'm not great at giving shots either. So
Terry usually gives all the shots. I can do them if she's going away, if I need to give shots, I'll give them. But I hold the goats to make sure they're not jumping around, and she gives a shot.
Yeah. It's same here.
Yeah.
That, and I'll confess to anyone in the world that I do not like shots, and I don't even like watching shots.
Oh, geez.
Squeamish. Okay, call me squeamish.
No,
if you're interested, I have to tell you another story about Nationals in 2016, which most people didn't know. The first day we got there, we had this big heavy-duty wagon, and we got everything in, and I took the wagon back to the trailer to put away, and it had these fold-up sides on it to come off of it. And so I folded them up, and I picked it up to put it in the trailer, and it came apart and came down right on my left foot. I didn't know at the time, but it had broken 3 toes.
Oh.
This was the first day.
Oh, jeez.
Well, I'm not going to stop now. This is our first national. So I went the whole week, and every night when I went to take my shoe off, I had such a hard time getting it off. And it was just swelled up so bad at the end of every day. But people didn't know, because I was walking normal during the day. But at nighttime, I could barely step on it. Couldn't get my shoe off. Had a hard time getting my shoe on the next morning. But once I got going, I was all right. But I got back home afterwards and finally went and got it x-rayed. And sure enough, 3 of them were broken.
Jeez. So it kind of sounds like you may be actually going on with the relationship.
Yeah, you've seen some of the stunts that I pulled through the end here.
Call a bale of hay.
Yeah,
round bale.
No, that was a square bale.
Oh, that was a square bale. Yeah, but it was one of the big square bales, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a 1,200-pound bale. And I had somehow come down with shingles in the fall right before this happened. And that was in January a couple years ago. And so I came down with shingles. And then right after that, my left shoulder started hurting like crazy. So I went to the doctor, and he said it was bursitis. I'm not old enough to have this kind of stuff going on. And so I couldn't use that arm. I was picking up these big 1,200-pound square bales, and they would load them on the truck over at the hay and feed place for me. when I get home, I'd push them back far enough that I could kind of get under and put my hands on both sides and lift and just flip them off the truck. And then I could pick them up with a tractor to move them in the barn. Well, I only had the one arm because my left arm, I couldn't do nothing. So I put my right hand into the one of the bale strings to get more leverage to lift with one arm. And I did. But when I did, for some reason, this bale flipped so fast, it tightened the bale string onto my hand and whipped me right out of the truck. Head and shoulders. And when I went flying, I said, this is it. I'm dying today. So, but luckily, it threw me clear of the bale. And it just kind of dazed me for a little bit. And so I said, I won't never do that again. I'll never put my hand in the bale string. I still flip the bales off the truck, but I don't stick my hands in the bale strings anymore.
Yeah, that's probably a safe bet. That's I've heard stories of balers and rappers. We had a kid down the street from us growing up that had an accident with a rapper once, and it's just scary stuff. You know, the stuff can happen on the farm. People don't realize. With breeding season here, you guys have quite the herd, sires. I noticed you guys not only retain your bucks born on the farm, but you also aren't afraid to bring in new genetics, which some people that have been doing it for 30 years might be. How are you guys changing things up with your sires, and how often are you guys doing
well? I think if you were watching, you would do see that we don't hang on to bucks very long once we have them collected, because we have them in the tank. We know, and that's the thing too, when you keep a herd small like ours, and it's as big as we really want it right now, our herd is, but still, when you keep it small, you have to move bucks around, and it's hard to maintain bringing in a good quality buck, because you never know if, you know, the reservation is going to be born. We get them in the tank. We know we have that option to try to AI them and bring this, keep that, putting those same genetics into some animals. But when you have the herd as small as we do, you have a hard time keeping those same ones year after year and using them. So we want to make sure that other good people can get good use out of them too. And we try to make sure that any of these good animals go to good homes where they're going to be taken care of and managed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know John's kind of a fan of Maximus there, so.
Yeah, he's a buck where I think to myself,
Zach,
if I could bring in another breed.
Maximus like is a really nice buck. And if you look down our webpage and saw Maddox, which has just been posted up there, we kind of kept him hidden for a little bit here. He's out of a sister to Jaya. Jaya and Jira were twin sisters. And so Maddox is out of Jira. Maximus is out of Jaya. But we didn't put Maddox up right away because Maddox, somehow, when we first put him outside, I don't know if he had his leg through the fence and maybe got rammed, but he broke his front right leg. And so we hadn't kept him in the barn for the longest time, and I splinted that leg, and Terry and I changed that splint at least every 2 weeks to make sure, and it healed perfectly straight. But in the process of all the time it took to heal that one, his left leg down at the pasture and started bowing in pretty bad.
I remember you. Didn't you post about this too?
Yep. And so what I've been doing is, you know, I bring him in every week and just keep touching his hoofs, you know, keep his hoofs trimmed. But that one specifically, I started putting an angle on the hoof to try to make it come back straight. And as of today, it's almost perfectly straight again. But he's just as big as Maximus, if not a little bit longer and taller.
Now, do you show your buck?
Yes, we do. We actually went to the show here recently. Maximus and Lawman and Longmire to the Son of a Buck show in Virginia. And each of them, you know, Lawman and Longmire are both yearling bucks, but they switched it up first and second in all six rings, you know, three times each first and three times each second. It was first in all six rings. And then Maximus Maximus in the lineup with all the older bucks actually took reserve champion twice.
Wow, that's really wow. Nice.
And Lawman is yearling did get a grand champion and best of breed in the champion challenge class.
Nice. Yeah, I like Longmire as well. First of all, I like the name because I'm a huge fan of the show. And he's a long, powerful guy. Your bucks are all just super powerful, deep. You know, that's something that it's impressive. And even somebody who doesn't have the breed can definitely appreciate that.
I got to ask, you had a picture a while ago, not too long ago, of some yearlings on the stand. You brought them into the milk room, put them all up on the stand. And again, there was the consistency that a lot of people have come to expect from your herd. Were they all like same sire?
No, they're not great sire.
I'm a rear leg person, and I was looking at those rear legs on those yearlings, and they were just so nice to look at.
Well, thanks. No, they all have some of them have the same sire, but they don't all have the same sire. So, and you'll see actually 1, 2, 3, 4. There's 4 different sires for all those kids.
Oh, wow. That is just a good, you know, indication of the consistency within your herd.
It's nice when we do that because it's not very often that we bring them in at the same time. I mean, we have 8 kids and then we had 6 mm-hmm. kids on the stand at the same time, but then we brought the other 2 in and I think we had a picture of those 2 as well. But there is, and yeah, you're right, there is some consistency with the exception of the sometimes you get like Midori, the one junior kid, she was just huge. She's the one that was like 12 and a quarter pounds when she was born.
Oh, wow.
And she was a single kid. But that's also from a breeding where the sire came from a really big dam from Bentleaf.
Okay.
I think that's the one, if I remember correctly. That was Kodiak. Kodiak is, he's a huge buck. I mean, it took him to the show up in Troy, Pennsylvania. And he placed first in every ring there as well. And he got all the reserve champions, but he was just a big, long, wide, long rump buck. And Midori has the same thing. She's just going to be one big doe.
Well, that's not a bad thing, that's for sure. I think when you splinted the buck's leg, front leg, and you honestly you were pretty lucky that it came out straight. I had a kid break his rear leg this year, his left side, I think, and I had no idea how he did it. It just we came out and he was limping, and I had a vet come. I took him to the vet and they splinted it and set it and all that. And he, before he hurt his leg, I mean, I'm not sure. You asked about him.
He was a sharp looking kid. He was a sharp looking kid.
So he was, but after it healed, it towed out like crazy. And he just, he was nothing but a weather after that. I mean, it was one of those heels where you're like, well, can he breed a doe? Maybe. Is it going to hurt him? Probably.
Yeah.
So he just went as a pet. But, I mean, you guys definitely lucked out on
that. Well, I'll tell you, it took a lot of time, and we weren't sure how it was going to turn out. But I was determined I was going to make that leg heel straight. So when I wrapped it before splitting it, I made sure I wrapped it to help keep it nice and snug in there without putting too much pressure on it. And
you put your that's a game to play right there.
When you put your hand
too
down,
too little, too much.
You would never know. There's no bump or anything there. It's healed completely straight and smooth. And then when his other leg bowed,
that's awesome.
You know, the vet actually told us that it would probably never straighten again.
Oh,
and I just said, well, maybe if I just keep trimming his hoof, you know, to angle it back the other way. And that's what I've been doing. And then as he's growing, as I don't keep touching that every week, you know, like I said, it's almost perfectly straight right now. And I would anticipate within another week, it will be perfectly straight.
Well, he'll definitely be a dream for the rest of his life to trim his hooves.
Oh, he's been really easy to handle right off the start, and just, you know, a very good mannered buck. And I think he's going to be one of our best.
Oh, well, I'm excited.
It was actually one that we were wanting to put in the spotlight sale this year.
Oh.
And then he broke his leg, and
oh, really?
Then we didn't have a spotlight sale anyway, so.
I know. We're lamenting that, and I guess
bummer, right?
That'll be something you guys will be discussing in a few weeks, is Oklahoma and New York for 2022. So we'll see how that goes.
So, you know, speaking of being a director, have you felt any pressure to be available to anyone and everyone that asks for help, either on Facebook or emails or whatever? Is there a lot of pressure there?
I don't feel any. I mean, yeah, I get contacted by a lot of people, but that's what I'm here for. And yeah, I did spend some time yesterday even answering a bunch of emails from people about different issues that they want to see support for or acknowledge and get information on. And as you know, I can't discuss a lot of stuff right now.
Right. We're not going to let her ask.
Right, yeah.
I want to encourage everybody to listen in. It's going to be made available for people to listen in. There'll be a link at your website. And that way, you know, this is probably something that Terry and I have been trying to suggest for a while, to make this available, you know, so that people could listen in to the board meetings virtually. Even if they can't see it, at least they could hear what their directors are doing or not doing, to make sure that their directors are giving the best input that they can, and to make sure the voices are heard.
I think every active member should be listening, you know, if you can't. Now, I understand some people, you know, when the meeting is going on, you may be at work or you're not able to actually hear
it. Recorded too.
Right. So I think everyone should, even just to listen and pay attention. I know we record it. My wife and I will discuss what happened, you know, during the meeting. And you learn a lot. And the other thing I'm learning is sometimes, as a director, you guys have to make decisions that may not be popular, but they may need to be what's best for the organization.
That's correct. And that's one thing I would hope to try to get the members to understand. Sometimes decisions will be made that the members might not like at the time, but most of them probably don't know the total financial situation of ag or whatever, which is something that I, as a director, have been fortunate enough. I'm on the finance committee, so I can see a lot of what goes on with the finances and know whether something's doable at the time or not. And one thing I hope everybody just be patient with this new NG system, because it's going to be good. I can tell you that right now. And if I know everybody's chomping at the bit for it, and just be patient.
I gotta ask, have you tried it?
I can't say a whole lot.
Maybe that was one of those questions we can't ask.
I can't say a whole lot, but just trust me, it's gonna be good.
Okay, good.
I honestly, I think with everybody that is a district director, you guys really, it's a tough job. You know, I'm sure my director's just tired of hearing from me. You know,
no
shocker here, I'm very vocal and reach out quite a bit when certain things are happening in the registry. But honestly, I've never gotten the feeling that I was just being brushed off. So I feel like anybody that's voting for you guys, we're doing a good job, because any director that I've ever had contact with or just talked casually with has been nothing but short of amazing. I mean, you guys do an awesome job
for
what you're dealt. And I think, Yeah, I just think a lot of people miss that, you know, with the certain small things that might start a riot on Facebook about the registry. It's nice when you can reach out about that riot to a director and get a nice, calm, concise answer.
And that's one thing I would encourage all the members to remember, too, is that, you know, it's good to have a different variation of different-minded people as directors on the board. Because if we all bought the same thing, then we'd probably fail. Yep. So it's good to have people that have different opinions, different mindset, because it makes that's what helps you come to better decisions. You know, it's having people with different opinions. And that's one thing I've learned over time. It's you don't have to agree with everybody on everything, and you can have differences of opinions to formulate good opinions.
Yeah, and diversity is great. I actually had a meeting at work with the NBA diversity director for the Players Association this week, and he was saying the same thing. You know, you need diversity in a large group of people, because not only are you challenging someone else's thoughts and making them think a different way that maybe they won't, but as a group, you're growing and trending up instead of sliding down the hill and really failing. So diversity is definitely great. And I think there is a good group of diverse people within the registry. So we talked about, we'll get away from the director part, the director hat, I guess we can put. And we were talking earlier about how you guys used to breed sign-ins. Is there a drive at all to expand into something else and wet your toes again into that? Or do you guys think you're just going to stick with
We're just going to stick with the La Manchas
for now.
Good answer. Good man. Good man.
You guys know how old we are.
I keep wondering. We're
both 62 years old, so there's no sense in trying to venture into something else.
72
right now.
And 29, you said. Terry's still 29.
I'm 62. Terry's 42.
Okay. Yeah.
Side by side, he looks about 20 years younger. So
there you go. Oh, you know. The southern sun is going to help you.
I don't know about that. It sure hasn't helped me grow my hair back.
It's a lot warmer down there.
It may be burning it off.
That's probably what's happening.
I think that's what's happening to mine, that I'm pulling it out.
You know, we're talking about Terry and I, and this is another thing I'd like to say here is that, you know, again, we're not the best herd in the country by far. And I think we have a really nice herd of La Manchas, and that we're gaining. I don't know if we'll ever get to our goal, but we're going to keep trying here for a while longer yet. But one thing that really contributes to us being where we're at is Terry and I work so well together. I've never had a harder working partner, wife. And, you know, we don't always agree with each other on everything. And when we don't agree, you know, she's right. But we work very well together. She's the hardest working woman that I've ever been with. And we work hard together. I cannot start a project here without her making sure she's a part of it. And she just wants to be in on everything and work just as hard as I do. She might not be as strong as I am, but she works just as hard as I do.
Amen. Yeah.
I hear you. There's nothing better than having a Robin to your Batman, or maybe
that's what Terry's. That's the one thing that helps with breeding good quality goats and managing them all is a partnership that works well together.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. I mean, Jen and I, we're partners on this. We don't make a decision on any of the breeding plans or anything without the other. It's partnership. It's two people operating as one, and I can see that in your situation, the two of you, and it's something I really respect.
Yeah. It's definitely a key to have in any marriage or partnership when you're breeding goats or doing anything as a family. You know, right now my wife is 9 months pregnant, and she a month ago was begging me to dry off the does, not because she hated how long it took for me to do chores or anything like that, but because she felt really terrible that she couldn't be out there to help and really, you know, take on that physical labor with me. I had torn muscles in my legs a couple weeks ago, and I'm just getting to the point where I'm really able to take on some
yeah, he drove up to the Hudson River area and
I didn't get the gnarly bruise though, so that was good. But I'm just able to finally tackle some harder working stuff that I had shoved off because I just couldn't do it. And she felt terrible about that. And I just, looking at it and hearing about you and Terry, I'm like, I've got this awesome wife that's gonna hopefully help me get to where my goals are too. And it's awesome. So one of my last questions here that I have for you is, do you have any advice for new breeders out there? Any like
for new breeders, the trade? I'll go back to the stuff that I said before. Don't get in over your head. Start with a good foundation of a few does that are already, you know, what you would consider a good starting point for does they would score fairly well on a scorecard. And most people don't know as new breeders what scorecard mm-hmm. is. But talk to people first. Talk to people that have done well. Just like we have such a good relationship with Don and Judy Hoy from Lucky Star. Talk to those people that mm-hmm. have done well and have really nice herd of goats, and try to pick something from their breedings, that some of their good does, and start with just a few of those and work your way up from those. Because if you start with a good foundation of a couple good does and keep breeding up, it's going to be so much easier for you.
Well, that's a really good tip to give people. I honestly wish that I had known that starting out, but honestly, when I started out, I kind of just fell into it. But it's definitely something where I, as a breeder, would definitely pass on that word. And also, just whatever you get, make sure you can stay.
Yep, exactly. Don't go to the sale barn and buy anything.
I see that mistake a lot, and it kills me, because then they're going to fall in love with the animals.
Yeah, there's too many people that end up cornered yourself, you know, buying stuff from sale barns, and they end up with maybe 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 goats. And like with that many goats, they think, well, why am I not winning when I got this many goats? Well, that's why you're not winning, because you got too many goats to manage them properly. Let me rephrase it. If you have, we got 23 goats, and there's two of us taking care of them. So if you're going to have that many goats, you need to have that many more people to take care of them and manage them well. Because I'll tell you what, with us working full time, all we can do to keep up with what we have.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a chore sometimes, but honestly, I'm doing pretty well. I started out the kidding season with more goats than I
added to his goats now. So
I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, I even added two new goats.
It does. It makes it so much easier.
I'm doing good.
We brought our girls in again yesterday and trimmed all their feet, and we do that every 3 weeks. And mm-hmm. I'll tell you, there's a lot of people who've asked this, and I've sent it out to several people, you know, what we do to manage our herd. And we even recently have had people asking again. So I save that document and I send it out, you know, and some people are using it and some people aren't. So,
well, you know, and along those lines, you know, I find you talk to a lot of the more successful recruiters and yourself and with the Oberhaslers, you know, we'll talk to, you know, Brandy, and we'll talk to Morgan Allen, and you mm-hmm. talk to, you know, Kiki Brackett or Megan Oakeson, and you
all good readers and you're heard as well,
right? And they have you know, a way that they do things, and to the point, like, you know, I know that, like, Megan has, like, she called it, like, the codex of when she sells a kid, she'll hand people this, or she'll send this, you know, how she manages her animals, what she expects, you know, the feeding, the growth, the weaning.
Yep.
And yep. It's really eye-opening, and people, you know, people ask us about, you know, how do we get our kids to, you know, be 90 pounds by breeding season for Oberhaslers, which are historically a small breed. And start them in January.
yeah. Or just keep them on the bottom.
Well, yeah, that was my fault.
That happened this year.
But we, you know, for example, we do keep our juniors on the bottle for 20 to 24 weeks, and some people will be like, "What?" You know, but we do, and we like how they grow. So, but that's another topic for another time, I think.
Yeah, I think what I want to get across here with. Don, you know, you mentioned that people ask you how you guys get your animals to look
exactly right.
You get what you put into them. If you're not spending time with them and trimming their hooves and putting quality feed in their stomachs and rumen, then you're not going to get the quality in return. And that's one thing you guys excel at is putting in and getting
a couple of some of our best friends, Richard and Rika Waldman. Rika Waldman would always say, feed them and they will grow. And when she says feed them and they will grow, there's a lot included in that statement. It's not putting food in front of them. It's what you put in front of them and how much you put it into it, whether it's quality food, quality hay, quality alfalfa, and quality minerals. And as babies, you know, calf pro we mixed in once a day. And that's been a big huge thing for us as far as making a difference in how our kids grow. And so people wonder, you know, there's no possible way for our kids to grow as big as they are when we take them into the ring and thinking they're not junior kids, they've got to be senior kids. Well, let me tell you, it's because we're putting a lot of money into them. And it's pretty much, you know, like Terry says, it's her whole paycheck that we put into these goats every month.
Yeah. Jen and I did the math, and it's pretty much Jen's paycheck too. So, yeah. From what I'm able to hear, and it's not just from you, Don. We've had, you know, Danielle on, and we've had Brandy on, and I'm sure we'll have other breeders on. And really, it's going to come down to a lot of you've got to have the good genetics, but you've got to nurture those genetics.
That's exactly right. You can have the best genetics in the world, and if you don't manage them, they're going to turn out just as lousy as
exactly. Ugly. I've seen that with my own eyes. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for having
me. Yeah.
There's always something.
Was there anything else you wanted to add, Nate?
I'll just wait till Louisville or Harrisburg, and we'll open on here then.
Well, Don, it's been a real pleasure. I really appreciate it, and I thank you, Terry, for letting him get an hour in, and we wish you could have been here, but we totally get that. My wife doesn't like to be limelight either, so it seems that behind every
that's exactly it.
Quiet woman that keeps him in line.
No, otherwise I'd be totally crazy.
Oh goodness, yeah.
Exactly. So, but yes, thank you for being here.
You're highly thought
it's
of.
It's been really a pleasure.
Your respective breeder. You know, we've had a pleasurable time talking with you.
Appreciate it, and it's been a pleasure too.
Well, everybody, that's going to wrap us up. You can catch us next week. Thank you for tuning in to Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast.
Good evening. Good night.
I'm John. That's Nate. And you guys have a wonderful evening.